This podcast is supported by Cartier. In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, Cartier shares testaments of love in all its forms from around the world. Please keep listening for today's love story later in this episode.
Modern Love, the podcast, is supported by
From the New York Times and WBUR Boston, this is Modern Love. Stories of love, loss, and redemption. I'm your host, Meghna Chakrabarty. Last week, we brought you part one of our live performance of Modern Love at the Hot Docs Podcast Festival in Toronto. This week, part two. Here's Paul Sun-Hyung Lee of the CBC show Kim's Convenience reading Carlos Kotkin's essay, We Didn't Have a Plan, But the Baby Did.
About a year into our marriage, my wife and I decided we were ready for the adventures of having a child. Now, despite our best efforts, it wasn't happening. We didn't know why. One night, as we were watching television, my wife turned to me and said, I think you're the problem. Now, she had no medical background. She was going by a woman's intuition. To set her mind at ease, I paid a visit to my doctor. It was my first time seeing this doctor. She looked to be about in her early 30s with dark hair and bright red lipstick. I explained to her that my wife and I were trying to have a kid, but so far, no luck. She said she would refer me to a fertility clinic. In the meantime, she suggested my wife and I have sex 3 times a week. I asked if she could please put that in writing. A month later, I went to the fertility clinic alone. My wife and I were married in our late 30s, hence our urgency. As a bachelor, I never imagined marriage would one day lead me to a small room in a medical office that contained a plastic specimen cup, a sink, a chair, a TV, and a DVD entitled Young and Horny. A sticker on the DVD read, Property of Fertility Clinic. Please do not remove. Now, without the use of visual aids, I started to do what I had been sent there to do. Now, it was difficult to concentrate because I could hear 2 women on the other side of the door talking about where they should have their lunch. Now, despite the less than optimal surroundings, I managed to complete my task. It then dawned on me that there wasn't a secret drawer in that room where I could discreetly leave my sample. Instead, I had to exit the room, cup in hand, and walk down the hall, passing several employees, until I got to the last desk where a ponytailed woman was working. She smiled and thanked me. I did my best to pretend I hadn't just masturbated and placed a cup of semen on her desk. Shortly after, I received a call with the results. As it turned out, I was the problem. Or so it seemed. My sperm count came in at 17 million. Now, 17 million may seem like a high balance at Wells Fargo, but at the sperm bank, it's below the poverty line. I assured my distraught wife that most of my swimmers probably stayed on the sidelines that day because they knew it was only an exhibition game. This did little to console her. The next day, she brightened after discovering she was pregnant, which meant she'd already been pregnant when I was in that stupid room with the pornography. If I just waited one more day, I wouldn't have had to drive to an office building and humiliate myself. But I was happy. I was going to be a father. We heard the baby's heartbeat during our first appointment with the obstetrician. I asked the doctor for the baby's due date. She took out her phone and used an app to calculate it. October 10th, she said. From that moment on, October 10th became a date that loomed large. It was like when a hurricane is shown on a weather map getting bigger and bigger. Only in my case, it was my wife's belly getting bigger and bigger. By the time my wife looked as if she had a basketball under her shirt, the baby was moving a lot. But I kept missing it. One night, when the baby was particularly active, my wife placed my hand on her stomach. I waited and waited. Nothing happened. I said, this is kind of like whale watching. Yeah. In retrospect, that was a dumb thing to say. I didn't know what I was doing. I mean, this was a new experience for me, for my wife, too. We had dinner with our friends, Anne and Mark, who had three kids and plenty of insight. Mark was upset when he found out I did not have a birth plan. You have to have a birth plan, he insisted. You need to know where to park, whether or not she's going to get an epidural, if there's going to be a shaman in the room. Well, I hadn't thought of these things because early on, my wife decided she did not want me in the delivery room. She was determined to face things on her own. There's a small park on the grounds of the hospital. I decided that on the day our child was born, I would sit on a bench in the park and maybe have a snack. At some point, I would receive a text that read, "Come and meet your baby," with a smiley face emoji. I pictured myself sitting in that park on October 10th many times. On August 10th, however, my wife woke me up around 10:30 p.m. with a look of concern and uttered, "Something's happening." Her water had broken. I jumped out of bed and thought, I need to get a birth plan. First step in my plan, put some pants on. We were ready to leave within minutes. There was just one obstacle we needed to get past. My in-laws. They happened to be visiting and were sleeping on an air mattress in the living room. I asked my wife, what do you want to do about your parents? Just go, she implored. So we rushed out. I didn't even look at them. When we got to the car, I received a text from my mother-in-law. Where are you going? I wasn't sure if I should tell her the truth and scare her or play it cool and say, everything was fine. We were just headed to a rave. I decided I'd let her know what was happening when I knew what was happening. We arrived at the hospital in record time and asked the security guard where people go to have a baby. He told us to make a left, take elevator to second floor, make a right and a right and a right, go down hall, make a right and a left and other right, then ring doorbell. Yeah, his exact words, incredibly. And somehow we did exactly that. A nurse examined my wife and explained that the baby wanted to show up early, but they would be able to delay the birth for about a month. My wife would have to stay in the hospital until then. A cot was wheeled in for me. It didn't look nearly as comfortable as my wife's bed, but I didn't say anything. We updated the in-laws, advising them to stay at our place. No sense having them come to the hospital and watch us try to sleep. Now, despite the medication my wife was given to delay our child's arrival, her contractions began an hour later. My cot was hastily wheeled out, and a pit crew of people raced in, including two nurses carrying an empty dessert tray. The on-call doctor took one look at my wife and said to me, "The baby's coming. Do you have any questions?" I asked if there was anything we could give my wife because she was in so much pain. The doctor explained there wasn't enough time. I wanted to ask if there was anything they could give me for my pain since I was supposed to be in the park under a tree. Instead, I turned to my wife and asked if she wanted me to leave the room. She grabbed my hand so hard I was certain she had crushed the bones in it. I took that as a no. There was moaning and breathing and squeezing and pushing, and then there was our baby, smaller than a teddy bear, crying loudly. Fantastic, the doctor said. That morning, I called my in-laws and told them there had been a change of plans. They are now grandparents. As I awaited their arrival, I saw a group of pregnant women with their husbands taking a tour. They were giddy and chatty as if on a field trip. I couldn't help but think, what a bunch of amateurs. After 5 weeks in the hospital, we finally brought our daughter home healthy and happy. I was officially a father. And being a father, as I am happily learning, involves a lot more than sitting on a park bench having a snack.
That's Paul Sun-Hyung Lee reading Carlos Kotkin's essay, "We Didn't Have a Plan, But the Baby Did." How's Carlos's daughter doing now? More after the break. We're back. It's Modern Love, the podcast. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Carlos Kotkin is a screenwriter and says he doesn't hesitate to tell deeply personal stories, but his wife's a little more reluctant.
On our first date, when she found out that I was a writer, she made me promise that I would never write anything about her, and I told her I wouldn't. in parentheses, except for maybe a story in the New York Times about her giving birth. But other than that, I would not write anything about her.
Carlos says his wife accepted that some parts of their life together would make it into his writing, including their daughter's birth story. She eventually went back to work, and Carlos remembers the days when he was responsible for taking care of the baby.
It was just me and her, and a lot of one-sided conversations. I told my daughter that I had never done this sort of thing before, so we'll see how it goes. I remember one day I showed her a papaya. I gave it to her. She held it. I was very proud and excited to show her the papaya. I said, "This is your first papaya, and I was here when you held your first papaya." And when my wife got home, I told her about the papaya, and she said, "That's great. It's a spaghetti squash." So we both learned something that day.
Carlos says that now his daughter has a lot of opinions and a lot of personality.
I was sitting at my desk the other day working on something, and the blinds were open, and I heard her behind me in her 4-year-old accent ask me to please close the blinds. And I told her I would, but I forgot that I said that. I was involved in work, and all of a sudden I hear behind me, "Come on, man, close the blinds." Also, sometimes she'll tell me, mostly at the dinner table, "You're not a very good dad," out of nowhere. And I'll ask her why she said that, and she'll say, "I'm just kidding." So she's got a very dark sense of humor.
She's also profound in the particular way that 4-year-olds can be.
My daughter and I were in the car not too long ago, and we drove past the building that I used to live in, and I pointed it out to her. I said, I used to live there. And she asked me, "Who did I live with?" And I said, "I lived by myself," which was shocking to her. "By yourself?" She wanted to know where she was and where mommy was. And I told her that I had not met either of them yet. And she responded, "I bet you missed us." "Very much. I missed them very much." I told her that.
Carlos Kotkin. He's a screenwriter, and his latest project is the animated feature, The Star. After the break, Daniel Jones, editor of the Modern Love column for the New York Times. Dan Jones says this essay reminded him of his own daughter's birth.
The expectations of having a first child and how you think you're going to be sitting in the park reading the newspaper while, you know, everything's taken care of for you, like that was just exactly my experience. And, you know, we ended up with an emergency C-section and getting stuck in midtown traffic when we were trying to get to the hospital, and just all of these expectations that I had that probably a lot of men have, thinking like I'm the sort of assistant here. It just all gets thrown out the window. So I thought his sense of humor about it and just confessing to his like lack of preparedness and sort of fantasy expectations just mirrored my experience so exactly. And based by how people responded to it, that was something that was familiar to a lot of other husbands and wives.
Thanks again to Paul Sun-Hyung Lee for reading this week's essay. You can see him on the CBC show, Kim's Convenience. Modern Love is a production of The New York Times and WBUR, Boston's NPR station. It's produced, directed, and edited by Jessica Alpert, John Parati, Amory Sievertson, and Caitlin O'Keefe. Special thanks to Andrew Rannells, Paul Sun-Hyung Lee, and Helene Joy for performing. Thanks as well to the team at Hot Docs. The idea for the Modern Love podcast was conceived by Lisa Tobin. Iris Adler is our executive producer. Daniel Jones is the editor of Modern Love for the New York Times and advisor to the show. Music for the podcast, courtesy of APM. You can always get more Modern Love on Facebook. Join the community at facebook.com/modernlove. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. See you next week.